this day in 2005, Luther Vandross died at the age of 54, less than 2 years after suffering a major stroke. Four Grammys he picked up. Hit song here. Here and Now. That's the one I know most. Luther Vandross died on this day 14 years ago in 2005. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve here on the Steve Gruber Show. We welcome onto the program Myron Magnet. Journalist, historian, editor of City Journal from 1994 to 2007, now the magazine's editor-at-large for City Journal. And a brand new book, Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution, from Myron Magnet. Myron, welcome onto the Steve Gruber Show. Tell us the title, this Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution, especially the second half. What point are you trying to make about the Constitution, and perhaps how did we lose it?
Well, okay, what we lost was that Constitution that the framers gave us in 1787, perfected by the Bill of Rights, the Civil War amendments, and the 19th Amendment giving women the vote. And we should never forget how extraordinarily avant-garde that document is, even today, because what it gave us was a government that leaves the individual free to pursue his own happiness in his own way, in his family and in his local community. So we have a constitution that doesn't give us people to rule us. We have self-government, and anybody who tells you, wait a minute, this is a 230-year-old document, we can do better than that, is blowing smoke, because nobody has come up with a better idea than that.
Now, Myron, Clarence Thomas is certainly a friend of the college as well, a commencement speaker a few years ago. I believe he's expected back soon for the dedication of our new chapel on campus. And you just started to sort of get into it there. But why the decision to sort of frame this argument about the lost Constitution around this one man, the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas?
Oh, I think he's a hero, Scott. I think that because we lost this Constitution, in part because the Supreme Court actively participated in it and then participated in it because FDR put a gun to its head. You really need a justice with the courage to say, hang on, we don't sit still if the people's elect representatives pass a law that the Constitution doesn't allow. We overturn it. So why should we be any more sensitive, respectful toward the errors of our predecessors if previous courts have made mistakes and declared that something is constitutional that really is inconsistent with our framework? Overturn it. Overturn that doctrine of stare decisis, of precedent. And you know, Scott, one of the interesting things is that 20% of the judges named to the federal bench by the Trump administration are ex-Clarence Thomas clerks. So not only has he got this roadmap for what to do, but he's kind of trained the troops to do it.
Myron Magnet with us. So the book Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution. I want to get back to Justice Thomas in a moment, but you spend part of the book, of course, explaining how the Constitution was lost and kind of look at three eras, the post-Civil War, 1870s, Woodrow Wilson, and then the Warren Court of the 50s and 60s. Now, we have a limited time, so for people to find out about all three, they'll have to grab the book. But I do want to focus a bit on the Wilson era. You write, Wilson cared less about using the court as a permanent constitutional convention than making it a force to clear away the Constitution's restraints and limitations. How so, and what was the end game for Wilson?
Well, he never got to do the end game because he ended up fighting a war and then having a stroke and dying. But he didn't like the limitations. He said the whole trouble with the Constitution is that it is set up to restrain the government from acting, and with our changing modern conditions, government needs to act very, very fast, and government therefore needs to have no checks on its power to do so. And those checks were unnecessary. Those checks are now unnecessary because all our administrators are so public-spirited and so well-educated that we never have to worry about tyranny, he thought. We've passed that stage, the arc of history, so to say. has moved us to an enlightened upland, a sunny upland, he called it, where you can just count on people being well-intentioned and doing things for the common good. Well, you know, the thing is, the framers understood that the people who were going to run the government they designed had the same all-too-human nature as everybody else. And as Mike Lee, I'm sure, told you, they want to aggrandize their power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all too easy to lose that self-government that is the unique American achievement and that Clarence Thomas is trying to restore to us in full measure.
Myron, you describe Clarence Thomas in the book as essentially a free, First Amendment absolutist. With the attacks that we see both on a personal speech side and a political speech side in recent years, is that going to be more important here in the next decade or so?
Well, we certainly are living in an era of free speech assaults in the universities. And we've seen now, at least since the 1960s, that what starts on the universities, in the universities, ends up making its way all through the culture. So I am afraid that now that we have a concept of hate speech in the universities, we're going to end up with ordinances that say, well, you can't, you know, and I mean, you can list all the victim groups that you're not supposed to talk about. Yes, I think it's going to be very, very important in that respect. But the other respect in which it's so important, Scott, is that there's a kind of piety that we have about campaign finance reform, as if there's something squeaky clean
mm-hmm.
about campaign finance reform. That's baloney, actually. One of the things that Madison was very clear about was that the danger in a democracy was the tyranny of the majority. And what he meant by that is that the unpropertied many would gang up on the propertied few.